From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
I guess, you know, when we walked out the front of the detention center and I seen friends and family, it kind of hit me then that I was free, you know.
Today, a Democracy Now! Exclusive. After more than 43 years in solitary confinement, Albert Woodfox is a free man. The former Black Panther spent more time in solitary confinement than any man in U.S. history. He was released in Louisiana on Friday. In his first broadcast interview, Albert Woodfox joins us from New Orleans, along with another former Black Panther who is imprisoned with him in Angola prison, Robert King.
We was cautiously optimistic, as they say, but we wanted to wait and see until he walked out of prison, and that's what we did. We saw him walk out. We were convinced that he would eventually walk out the door, but we wanted to make sure that he would be walking out the door before we began to celebrate within ourselves too much, because we had been let down too many times.
Robert King and Albert Woodfox are two of the Angola Three. Herman Wallace died of cancer a few days after he was released from prison in 2013. We'll also speak with Billy Southern, one of Albert Woodfox's lawyers, about his path to freedom. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Albert Woodfox, who spent more than 43 years in solitary confinement, more than anyone else in the United States, has been released from the Angola prison in Louisiana. Woodfox walked free on Friday after he entered a plea of no contest to charges of manslaughter and aggravated burglary of a prison guard more than four decades ago. Prior to Friday's settlement, his conviction had been overturned three times. Woodfox and the late fellow Angola Three member Herman Wallace were accused in 1972 of stabbing prison guard Brent Miller. They always maintained their innocence, saying they were targeted because of their attempts to address horrific prison conditions by organizing a chapter of the Black Panther Party in prison. Herman Wallace was freed in 2013, just days before he died from cancer. We'll be joined by Albert Woodfox, as well as Robert King, two of the surviving Angola Three, in Woodfox's first broadcast interview after headlines. In Syria, bomb attacks around the Syrian capital Damascus and the city of Homs have killed at least 150 people and wounded scores more, marking one of the deadliest days in the nearly five-year-old conflict. ISIL has claimed responsibility for Sunday's attacks, which included a car bombing and two consecutive suicide attacks near a Shiite shrine outside Damascus and two bomb attacks in the city of Homs. The blast came the same day Secretary of State John Kerry announced a provisional agreement between the United States and Russia on a ceasefire in Syria. U.S. airstrikes on a suspected ISIL training camp in Libya have killed two Serbian hostages. The hostages were a communications officer and a driver on staff at the Serbian embassy who were taken hostage in November. They were among about 50 people killed in Friday's U.S. airstrikes. The Serbian Prime Minister, Aleksandar Vučić, said Serbia had been close to securing the hostages' release.
This is the first major hostage crisis that the Republic of Serbia has faced. Our state security acted very professionally, very seriously. If they had not been killed and allied, meaning U.S. bombing, our people would have been freed, as we have said so many times before.
The Pacific island of Fiji has been hit by the most powerful storm ever recorded in the Southern Hemisphere. Cyclone Winston killed at least 17 people and flattened entire villages. Thousands were forced to evacuate. Aid groups have warned of a looming health crisis after supplies of fresh water were blocked in some areas. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has beat Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders in the Nevada caucuses, winning 53% versus Sanders' 47%. Clinton celebrated her victory Saturday night.
We need more than a plan for the big banks. The middle class needs a raise, and we need more jobs. We need jobs that pay well and can't be outsourced, jobs that provide dignity and a future.
Exit polls show Sanders again dominated among young people, with 82% of under 30 voters. Clinton won strong support among African American voters, a bad sign for Sanders heading into this week's Democratic primary in South Carolina. Despite beating Hillary Clinton in the earlier New Hampshire primary, a tally of delegates so far shows Sanders has just 70 delegates, while Clinton has 502. That's in part due to unelected superdelegates, often lobbyists or elected officials who represent the party elite and are not beholden to what voters want. Sanders vowed to continue his campaign for the nomination.
We have come a very long way in 9 months. It is clear to me, and I think most observers, that the wind is at our backs. We have the momentum. And I believe that when Democrats assemble in Philadelphia in July at that convention, we are going to see the results of one of the great political upsets in the history of the United States.
In South Carolina, Republican candidate Donald Trump sealed his place as frontrunner, winning the primary with 32.5% of the vote. Florida Senator Marco Rubio closely beat Texas Senator Ted Cruz for second place. Trump's victory came a day after he cited a story about a U.S. general who supposedly executed Muslim prisoners a century ago using bullets dipped in pig's blood. There's no evidence the story Trump told about General John Pershing's action in the Philippines is actually true.
And he took the 50 terrorists, and he took 50 men, and he dipped 50 bullets in pig's blood. You heard that, right? He took 50 bullets, and he dipped them in pig's blood. And he had his men load his rifles, and he lined up the 50 people, and they shot 49 of those people. And the 50th person, he said, "You go back to your people and you tell them what happened."
Following a decisive loss in the South Carolina primary, former Florida Republican Governor Jeb Bush ended his bid for the 2016 Republican presidential nomination.
"I'm proud of the campaign that we've run to unify our country and to advocate conservative solutions that would give more Americans the opportunity to rise up and reach their God-given potential. But the people of Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina have spoken, and I really respect their decision. So tonight, I am suspending my campaign."
No.
Yeah.
In Kalamazoo, Michigan, officials say six people were killed and two injured when an Uber driver went on a four-hour-long shooting rampage, opening fire on people seemingly at random. Jason Brian Dalton allegedly shot people at three different locations: a woman outside an apartment complex, a father and a son looking at cars at an auto dealership, and a group of women parked at a Cracker Barrel restaurant. In Bolivia, President Evo Morales appears to have narrowly lost a referendum allowing him a fourth term in office. Morales's current term ends in 2020. The referendum would have amended the Constitution to allow him to remain until 2025. In 2006, Evo Morales took office as Bolivia's first indigenous president. In Brussels, Greenpeace activists have blocked the entrance of a building to stop negotiators from the United States and European Union from meeting behind closed doors to negotiate a massive trade deal. Opponents say the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership would expand corporate power at the expense of public health and the environment. Saskia Richards, deputy director of Greenpeace Europe, announced the protest.
"Greenpeace has blocked U.S. and EU negotiators from discussing a trade deal that threatens democracy, our environment, social standards and working conditions. In fact, this trade deal is not at all about trade. It's about transferring powers from the people to big business. What they call barriers to trade are, in fact, the safeguards that protect our air and food from being poisoned."
In New York City, nearly 100 people gathered in Harlem to mark the 51st anniversary of Malcolm X's assassination and to demand justice for residents of Flint, Michigan, over the poisoning of the city's drinking water. Peggy Shepherd, with the Harlem-based group WEAC, spoke about the connections between the water crisis in Flint, which is a predominantly African-American city, and high levels of pollution in other Black communities, such as Harlem.
We're here to stand in solidarity with Flint, because this is a gross example of environmental racism. We started here in Harlem because of the inordinate amount of pollution in this community that has been making people sick, and we work within the national environmental justice movement to right these wrongs, because millions of people in this country, predominantly people of color, do not have clean water, clean air, and safe schools.
To see our video report from Flint, Thirsty for Democracy, go to democracynow.org. During the demonstration in Harlem, protesters spoke in front of a banner with one of Malcolm X's most iconic phrases, "by any means necessary." Sunday marked the 51st anniversary of Malcolm X's assassination. In Texas, a health official has been forced to retire after co-authoring a peer-reviewed study on the negative effects of anti-choice state policies on reproductive health. Rick Augier, director of research at the Texas Health Commission, co-authored a study that documented a drop in birth control access after Texas banned Planned Parenthood from a state family planning program. Augier stepped down after a Republican lawmaker complained about the study. A judge has ordered pop star Kesha to remain in a contract that forces Kesha to work with the producer she says drugged and raped her when she was 18. Kesha was shown sobbing in court after a judge upheld the contract. Manhattan Supreme Court Justice Shirley Comrich said, quote, "my instinct is to do the commercially reasonable thing," unquote. The contract requires Kesha to record 6 more albums with Sony despite accusations of abuse against producer Luke Gottwald. Harper Lee, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of the novel To Kill a Mockingbird, about racial injustice in the South, has died at the age of 89. Lee, who avoided the public spotlight, was the center of media attention last year when her publisher announced the release of Go Set a Watchman, an early version of To Kill a Mockingbird, which Lee's attorney said she stumbled upon decades after it was written. Harper Lee died in her sleep in her hometown of Monroeville, Alabama, which the town of Macon in To Kill a Mockingbird was modeled after. She was buried in a private ceremony. And the Italian scholar and author Umberto Eco, best known for his best-selling 1980 novel The Name of the Rose, has died at his home in Milan, Italy. He was 84 years old. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, a Democracy Now! Exclusive. Joining me in hosting today's broadcast is Democracy Now!'s criminal justice correspondent, Renee Feltz.
Thanks so much, Amy. It's great to be here, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world. After more than 43 years in solitary confinement, Albert Woodfox is a free man. Woodfox has spent more time in solitary confinement than anyone in the United States. He was released from prison in Louisiana on Friday. After 4 decades, the former Black Panther was kept in a 6-by-9 cell for 23 hours each day. Albert Woodfox was released Friday after he entered a plea of no contest to charges of manslaughter and aggravated burglary for a prison guard who was murdered more than 4 decades ago. Prior to Friday's settlement, his conviction had been overturned 3 times. On Friday, Woodfox left Feliciana Parish Jail, where he'd been held pending his trial, and headed to his mother's gravesite.
I need to go say goodbye to my mother. I wasn't allowed to go to a funeral when I was in Angola, and my sister as well.
Albert Woodfox was serving a 5-year sentence for armed robbery at the Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola when he and fellow prisoner Herman Wallace were accused in 1972 of stabbing prison guard Brent Miller. The two men have always maintained their innocence, saying they were targeted because they had organized a chapter of the Black Panther Party to address horrific conditions in Angola prison, a former cotton plantation. Woodfox, Wallace, and a third man, Robert King, became collectively known as the Angola Three. For decades, Amnesty International and other groups campaigned to free the three men. Woodfox was the last remaining member of the group to be locked up. Robert King was freed in 2001 when his conviction that he had killed a fellow inmate was overturned. Herman Wallace was freed in 2013, just days before he died from cancer. But the state of Louisiana refused to release Woodfox until now.
After Albert Woodfox's first conviction was overturned, Louisiana successfully tried him in a second time in 1998. Then in 2014, a federal judge ruled he should be set free on the basis of racial discrimination in his retrial. When then-Louisiana Attorney General Buddy Caldwell announced plans to try Woodfox yet again, U.S. Middle District Court Judge James Brady ordered his release based on five factors. Quote, Mr. Woodfox's age and poor health, his limited ability to present a defense at a third trial in light of the unavailability of the witnesses, this court's lack of confidence in the state to provide a fair third trial, the prejudice done unto Mr. Woodfox by spending over 43 years in solitary confinement, and finally, the very fact that Mr. Woodfox has already been tried twice and would otherwise face his third trial for a crime that occurred over 40 years ago, unquote. But the U.S. Fifth Circuit then approved Woodfox's continued detention. Albert Woodfox was released on Friday after he entered a plea of no contest to charges of manslaughter and aggravated burglary. Well, joining us now in a broadcast exclusive from New Orleans PBS station WLAE is Albert Woodfox himself, giving his first televised interview since his release on Friday. Also joining us there is Robert King, the other surviving member of the Angola Three, and Albert Woodfox's attorney, Billy Southern, also joins us from New Orleans. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Albert Woodfox, how does it feel to be free?
I haven't quite figured it out yet, but it feels great.
Well, can you talk about what happened on Friday as you left the parish jail in New Orleans? This was after 45 years in prison, 43 years in solitary confinement. You're the longest-standing prisoner in solitary confinement in the United States.
For a moment there, everything seemed surreal. And we had to sit around about an hour and something waiting on the final documents to be faxed to the West Feliciana Detention Center. And when that finally happened, and, you know, my brother and my attorneys, you know, they walked out with me, and family and friends began to express joy and excitement. And we got in my brother's car, and we slowly drove. And we answered a few questions, and then we proceeded to go to say goodbye to my mother.
You visited your mother's grave?
Yes, I did. Well, we wasn't able to see her because of the time involved. When me and my brother got there, the cemetery was closed. So we went to another cemetery where I could say goodbye to my sister and my brother-in-law, who passed away while, you know, I was still in Angola.
Albert, it's so great to have you join us. Can you explain the significance of going to visit your mother's gravesite and why that was the first place that you wanted to go?
Well, when my mom passed away, I had made a request to go to her funeral and say my final goodbye. Warden Burl Cain denied that request, and the same thing happened with my sister when she passed away. My family and friends had made arrangements to allow me to go and say goodbye. Again, Warden Burl Cain denied that. So for some years now, there has always been this emptiness when it came, you know, to my mom and my sister, because I never had a chance to say that final goodbye. And so that's why it was important that one of my first acts of being free was to relieve that burden off of my soul.
Albert, you were in solitary confinement for more than four decades at Angola, this what's known as a plantation prison, known for the country in Africa where enslaved men and women were brought from and serving at that plantation, enslaved at that plantation. Then it became a prison where thousands of mainly African-American prisoners are held. Describe your cell, where you lived.
Well, I lived in a concrete cell with bars in the front of it. As you enter the cell, there was a metal bunk attached to the wall, and there was also a combination zinc and toilet bowl against the back wall.
And how did you keep your sanity? Explain how many hours a day you were kept in this cell. Were you ever allowed out?
Well, we got 1 hour a day. You know, when we were first put in CCR in 72, myself, Harmon Wallace, and Robert King, we knew that if we had any chance of maintaining our sanity and you know, not allowing the prison system to break us, that we had to keep our focus on society and not become institutionalized, where we were only concerned with the things that were going on in the prison.
When you say we, when you were allowed to go out, did you go out alone or with other people for the hour a day?
Well, when we first put in CCR, they used to let everybody out who wanted to shower on the till to take their hour together. But as time, you know, passed and some of the inmates started to protest some of the things that were going on, and all the to dilute unity, they start letting us come out one at a time.
Were you able to read in your cell?
Yes. It's one of the tools we use to remain focused and to stay connected to the outside world.
What did you read?
History books, books on Malcolm X, Dr. Martin Luther King, Franz Fanon, James Baldwin, you know, just any kind of little literature that I could basically get a hold of.
And how often were you allowed to see visitors?
At that time, the visiting system, you were allowed 10 people on your approved visit in this, and each person could visit twice a month. But, you know, because of the long distance and the economic situation, my family was not able to come, you know, as much as they would have liked to. So they try to come at least once a month.
You were imprisoned. You were sentenced to 5 years when you first went to prison. But then when we come back from break, I want to talk about what ultimately you were charged with after you and a guest who will be joined by next, Robert King, as well as the late Herman Wallace, formed a chapter of the Black Panther Party in the Angola prison. We're talking to Albert Woodfox. He is the person longest held in solitary confinement in the United States. He was released on Friday. After 45 years in prison, after 43 years in solitary. Stay with us.
liberty forever. Full stamps on a letter. God, where has your hope gone now? Rules, they're always bending. Solidly we're standing. Hopeful, but we don't know how. We're going down. We're going.
Yellow Ribbon, a song sung by Swedish artist Meja to support Amnesty International's campaign to free Albert Woodfox, who was just freed on Friday. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Democracy Now!'s Renee Feltz in this Democracy Now! Exclusive hour. Albert Woodfox speaking out in a television radio broadcast for the first time since his release from a parish jail in New Orleans on Friday, met by his brother, the longest-standing solitary confinement prisoner in the United States. Albert was served for 43 years in solitary. We are also joined by Robert King. Robert King is another member of what became known as the Angola Three. Albert Woodfox, Robert King, and Herman Wallace. Robert King spent 29 years in solitary confinement for a murder he did not commit. Billy Southern is also with us, one of the trial attorneys representing Albert Woodfox. Robert King, you have traveled the country, the world, trying to have the other members of the Angola Three, Herman Wallace, who died in 2013, a few days after he was released from Angola, died of cancer, and Albert Woodfox freed, telling their stories. Can you talk about what it means for you to have Albert free?
Yes, thank you, Amy. Of course, I can tell you, for me personally, I think it was joyous. The jubilation in which, you know, that Albert may not have felt, the crowd felt that we were overjoyed. Not that he wasn't. The clouds that perhaps, you know, the clouds that were over him probably prevented the jubilation from being present. But it was there, and the crowd showed it. So it was a good thing for the crowd. It was a good thing for me personally. I think it was it was a victory for justice, finally being rendered, if you want to call it justice. Justice delayed, of course, they say it's justice denied, but nevertheless, it happened. And so I was overjoyed that it had, quote, finally happened, because we had been here so many times and disappointed and let down. So, but it was a joyous occasion, and Albert is here now, and he's acclimating himself to his environment, his new environment.
Thank you, King. Now, I want to go back to 1972 and this original charge that Herman Wallace and Albert Woodfox faced, that they murdered a prison guard, Brent Miller. A key witness in the case against them was a man named Hezekiah Brown, who said he witnessed the murder of Brent Miller. But his credibility was later called into question. I want to go to a clip from the documentary In the Land of the Free, where we hear from a lawyer who represented the Angola Three and who describes Hezekiah Brown. Now, after this, you're going to hear from the narrator of the film, Samuel L. Jackson, actor. This first, though, is Nick Trentacosta.
Hezekiah first told the investigators at the prison that he was nowhere around. He didn't know anything about the murder.
Yeah.
A few days later, he's dragged from his bed at midnight, put under the bright lights of interrogation, and told, if you help us crack the case, we will get you your freedom. At that point, he said it was Wallace and Woodfox.
And local author Ann Butler's research recordings provided evidence of just how pliable Hezekiah Brown could be.
Well, at the trial, they called Hezekiah Brown, you know, and he said that he saw Woodfox and three other black men.
Yeah, but Hezekiah was one you could put words in his mouth.
That last voice was Hilton Butler, a former warden at Angola Prison, talking about Hezekiah Brown, a key witness in the state's case against Albert Woodfox and Herman Wallace. Albert Woodfox, can you talk about the allegations against you and who is and who was Hezekiah Brown?
Yes. You know, at the time, myself and Herman Wallace was very active in the prison population, trying to organize resistance to some of the corruption that was going on, the brutalities, guys being murdered almost every day or brutally beaten. And so we think that when Officer Miller was killed, we automatically became public enemy number one as far as the security staff and the administration at the Louisiana State Penitentiary. And it was, although it was a shock, it was not a surprise. I was the first one of the A3 to be locked up in the dungeon for the Brent Miller killing. And the next day I was moved to CCR, and where I remained until my freedom on my birthday, February 19th.
I mean, you were released on your birthday, February 19th.
Yes, quite a birthday gift.
Well, on Friday, as you were released, Louisiana State Attorney General Jeff Landry said in a statement he thanked the family of Brent Miller and that, quote, their support has been instrumental in today's very difficult decision. Miller's sister, Wanda Callender, told the Advocate newspaper she felt the plea deal, quote, was slammed in our face. But Brent Miller's widow has long said she did not believe that prisoners Albert Woodfox and Herman Wallace killed her husband. She released a statement last June saying, quote, I think it's time the state stop acting like there's any evidence that Albert Woodfox killed Brent. After a lot of years looking at the evidence and soul-searching and praying, I realized I could no longer just believe what I was told to believe by a state that did not take care of Brent when he was working at Angola and did not take care of me when he was killed, unquote. So I want to go to a clip of Teenie Rogers, who was just 17 when her husband, Brent Miller, was stabbed to death in 1972. She was interviewed in the 2010 documentary In the Land of the Free.
I've been living this for 36 years. There's not a year that goes by that I don't have to relive this. And it just keeps going and going. And then these men, I mean, if they did not do this, and I believe that they didn't, they have been living a nightmare for 36 years.
That was Teenie Rogers, who is also called Teenie Verrett. Your response, Albert Woodfox, when you hear Officer Miller's wife saying that she did not believe that you were guilty, this the reason you were put in solitary confinement and held there for more than four decades?
Well, you know, I was, you know, I guess, for lack of a better word, I was shocked when, you know, I learned that she had taken the position that after looking at the evidence and, you know, just—I guess it just never felt right to her that we were a part of a whoever killed her husband. And I think it was very brave on her part to publicly state that.
Now, Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry issued a statement about the state's plea agreement with you, saying, quote, "After carefully considering all of the facts and circumstances surrounding this case and its procedural history as it stands today, our team of prosecutors believes this plea is in the best interests of justice." Landry was recently elected to replace the former Louisiana Attorney General Buddy Caldwell, who'd successfully appealed to prevent Albert Woodfox's release last year after a federal judge ordered him freed. Another key figure no longer active here is longtime Angola warden Burl Kane, who said he would keep Woodfox in lockdown regardless of his crime, since, quote, "I still know that he's still trying to practice Black Pantherism," unquote. Kane resigned last year after he came under investigation for violating prison policy by entering into real estate deals with family members of Angola prisoners. I'm wondering if you can talk about the role of Burl Kane and Buddy Caldwell in the Angola 3 case and these latest developments, Albert.
Well, obviously, Burl Kane and Buddy Caldwell made this case personal, so personal to the point where they totally disregard the Constitution, statutory law, due process, lack of evidence, and just decided that, you know, I was guilty, Harmon was guilty, and they would do everything they could to keep us in jail until we both died. Unfortunately, they almost succeeded, but as tragic as it was to lose Harmon, he died a free man.
Now, Albert, can you clarify, please, this no contest plea that you entered on Friday? Talk about, you know, we've come to this point after more than four decades where you were able to come to this agreement with the state after maintaining your innocence this entire time. Now you have a no contest plea, but not everyone understands what that means and maybe why you did that. So can you explain that for us?
Well, the plea nolo contendere, it's a plea. For me, it was a plea for my freedom, not a plea of guilt. And I had to factor in the fact, you're my age, I have some serious health issues, and I wasn't getting the proper treatment for these issues. I wanted to get back to my family. And, you know, my lawyers, my attorneys, they worked so hard to make this a reality. So when this opportunity came up, as distasteful as it was, it gave me the opportunity to reunite with my family and my and, you know, I just—
Well, let me ask—
No, go ahead.
I wanted to ask Billy Southern, your lawyer, about the significance of Buddy Caldwell finally in Louisiana. He was defeated. And Jeff Landry, the new attorney general, coming into office. Billy Southern, you're one of the trial attorneys who represented Albert Woodfox, one of the Angola Three. Talk about what that change of attorney general meant, and also what prison warden Kane being forced out meant.
Attorney General Caldwell, the former attorney general, had such a deeply deep misconceptions about Albert and this case. He referred fairly recently to Mr. Woodfox as one of the most dangerous men on the planet. So this is someone whose appraisal of this case has never made any sense. He also committed to refusing to test a bloody fingerprint that was found at the crime scene that was never matched to anybody, that specifically did not match Albert, did not match his co-defendants, did not match anyone that had been tested against. But they had the fingerprints of all of the inmates at Angola on that day in 1972 and steadfastly refused to compare that fingerprint against other inmates, which, of course, could have identified the real killer. Buddy Caldwell's words on that were, well, we won't be fooled by those fingerprints. So this is someone who had such a had such misconceptions about this case that really any sober-minded person replacing him and making an honest assessment of the case was going to come to it without all of his biases and prejudice and come to different conclusions. And we really believe that that's part of what happened, is that a more reasonable assessment was made about the case, a more reasonable assessment was made about Albert, because, frankly, no one could have been more unreasonable than Buddy Caldwell. Mm.
And Burl Cain, the significance of the warden and the conditions that Albert Woodfox and Herman Wallace, and before that as well, Robert King, were held in.
Obviously, for 43 years, for 46 years, Albert has been incarcerated there at Angola, and he has struggled, and Robert has struggled, and others have struggled to improve things. And it's a testament to these men that they essentially outlasted some of the very, in many ways, mean-spirited people who were very dedicated to seeing that their circumstances never change. So advocating on their own behalf, developing followers all around the world, Albert, Robert, others have been able to outlast in a very improbable way even figures like Burl Cain and Buddy Caldwell, who seem so entrenched here.
And what nolo contendere means as a lawyer, explain. You have Albert Woodfox, who has served 45 years in prison, 43 of those years in solitary confinement. What it means now to plead no contest, nolo contendere, to manslaughter and aggravated—what was it? Burglary?
Aggravated burglary. Yeah, so essentially what it means is that Albert gets freed. And the legal proposition is essentially that that Albert can maintain his innocence, and he has maintained his innocence as he has consistently for 43 years, but that that it's an acknowledgment that that there is evidence that could support a conviction. And, of course, Albert has been wrongfully convicted two times by an array of witnesses who lied to secure his conviction. We litigated everything incredibly strenuously in this case, and we were very dedicated to make sure that the injustice that had previously occurred in Albert's case twice with two convictions did not repeat itself. And we litigated issues like excluding the prior witness testimony of Hezekiah Brown, other witnesses, and they wanted to just bring in these transcripts of these witnesses. But in fact, these witnesses had lied, and in fact, the government had suppressed evidence that would have allowed Albert to impeach these witnesses at their earlier trials. And you will not be surprised to find out that, notwithstanding very aggressive and competent litigation on that point by myself and Robert McDuff, Albert's other trial attorney, we lost those issues at the trial court just recently. We appealed those, and it was our intention to appeal those all the way to the Louisiana Supreme Court. But we lost that appeal on those issues to in the First Circuit Court of Appeals. So those testimonies were coming in. And I've been practicing in Louisiana long enough to know that I need to make a realistic assessment of the courts here, and that the injustices that have previously occurred in Albert's case, we could not be guaranteed that those would not occur again, because this is a West Feliciana Parish jury in the heart of Louisiana. We litigated, for instance, that the venue needed to be changed, because, of course, Albert could not get a fair trial in a community where he is infamous and where there's prison guards and associates of the prison in almost every home. We did a 43-year survey of the incredibly damning media portrayal of Albert, and we lost that motion. So the trial was going to be back in West Feliciana Parish. This bogus testimony was going to come back in. And in addition to all of that, we have Albert's health problems, and we have his long struggle, and he had an opportunity for freedom. And that was absolutely the choice that we advised him to take, because for us, Albert's incredible things that he's done in prison will only be greater now that he's out. And he deserved the opportunity to be out, and he deserved the opportunity not to have to trust a Louisiana jury to make the right choice in this case when they've done the wrong thing two previous times.
We're going to break, then come back to this discussion. And I want to ask Albert Woodfox what it was like, chained and shackled, to see Herman Wallace for the last time when you got to say goodbye to him, along with Robert King, the three of you together for a final time, as Herman lay dying in the prison, but a judge demanding of the prison warden that Herman Wallace be freed, or else the warden would go to jail. We're talking to Albert Woodfox, the longest-standing solitary confinement prisoner in the United States, Billy Southern, his attorney, and Robert King, also a member of the Angola Three, who spent 29 years in solitary confinement. This is Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
Why don't you bring heaven down to me? Little songbird, can you bring heaven down? Why don't you bring heaven down to me? Little songbird, can you bring
Free by Sari Quintana, Sarah Quintana, a New Orleans artist who is a pen pal with the late Herman Wallace, a member of the Angola Three, who was held in solitary confinement for more than 40 years. He died in 2013, 3 days after his release from prison in Louisiana last October. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Democracy Now!'s Renee Feltz, and we are bringing you a Democracy Now! Special today, an exclusive hour with two of the Angola Three, Albert Woodfox, the longest-standing solitary confinement prisoner in the United States, was freed on Friday. This is his first extended television radio interview. Robert King is also in the New Orleans studio at public television station WLAE, a member of the Angola Three, held for 29 years in solitary confinement. And Billy Southern, one of the trial attorneys representing Albert Woodfox. Albert, I want to go to a clip of Herman Wallace, in his own words, describing the impact of solitary confinement on his body. He spoke in phone calls from the prison that was featured in the documentary Herman's House.
been in a cage for such an extended period of time, it has this downfall. I mean, you may not feel it, you may not know it, you may think that you're okay, and you just perfunctorily move about, you know. However, when it was removed from out of that type of situation and placed in an open environment where, you know, you're even breathing that oxygen and it's getting into your lungs and you're feeling something, you know, growing within you, and it, you begin to develop a different mold within your body. I even watch my body. I look in the mirror and I've seen muscles and begin to pop out there. I begin to run even faster and I'm saying, whoa, what the hell is going on here? Much was preserved. But then I got locked up again after 8 months. And being locked up like that, the whole body just got confused.
That was Herman Wallace describing solitary confinement in 2013 as he lay dying in Angola, in prison, dying of cancer. A judge ruled that he should be released immediately. The prison warden said he wouldn't be coming back to the prison immediately, and the judge said if he didn't release Herman Wallace, an ambulance had pulled up to the prison, that the warden himself would be imprisoned. But before he left that prison, Albert Woodfox and Robert King got to say goodbye. Albert, what was it like? Because as you came to see Herman, you and Robert King learned that Herman would be freed, and you were the ones to deliver that news to Herman Wallace. You were shackled at the time?
Yes. Because the Attorney General's office would not allow Herman, Robert, and myself to have a conference with our attorneys, we had to ask the court to intervene. So they were under court instructions to at least once a month to allow us, all three of us, to meet together with our attorneys. These visits were taking place at Hunt's because at the time Herman was battling cancer. Robert was free, and I was being held in David Wade Correctional Institution. So they had to transport me. But on this particular visit, Herman was very ill, and they didn't expect him to live beyond the weekend, but somehow he did. And the DOC wanted to cancel the visit. So I was desperate to see Herman because I knew how sick he was. So a suggestion was made that they would let the visits go if I would agree to keep my restraints on. And one of the restraints on is called a black box. It's supposed to be used for travel only. It kind of locks your hands in a very uncomfortable and painful position. But, you know, nothing short of death would have stopped me from going to see Herman that one last time. And so when I got there, Robin and two of the attorneys was in the hospital room with him. And you could see, you know, that he was battling. You know, I kind of felt like he knew he was dying, but he was determined to last for that one last visit, you know. And during, he was laying in the bed, and King and I and the lawyers, you know, we were just talking amongst ourselves, talking to him, trying to find some way to comfort him as well as ourselves. And one of the attorneys was called away, Ms. Corinne Williams, and she had a conversation with George Kendall, who was our lead attorney, that Herman's conviction had been overturned and he had been ordered released immediately. And, I was, you know, all of us, you know, we were just shocked, stunned, elated, and, you know, we just didn't know what to do, you know. So we just tried to comfort him and talk to him and try to get him to understand what had happened. And for me, I had to leave at 3 o'clock, so I didn't get a chance to see him actually leave. But, it was just a great, great moment, you know. It kind of made up for all the pain and suffering that all three of us went through being locked in solitary confinement.
Albert, you and King are still pursuing a civil rights lawsuit. And your attorney, George Kendall, who's handling this civil case, said Friday in a statement, quote, "Although we are overjoyed that Albert Woodfox is finally free, it is indefensible that he was forced to endure a decade after decade in harsh solitary confinement conditions, longer than any prisoner in the history of the United States. Albert survived the extreme and cruel punishment of 40 years in solitary confinement only because of the extraordinary strength of his extraordinary strength and character. These inhumane practices must stop. We hope the Louisiana Department of Corrections will reform and greatly limit its use of solitary confinement, as have an increasing number of jurisdictions around the country." Now, of course, this has happened both at the local level as well as federally, with President Obama announcing solitary reforms in an executive order and recently announcing in an op-ed that he wanted to reduce solitary confinement for juveniles. Now, I wanted to get your take on this reason that you're pursuing a civil lawsuit still and your response to some of these reform measures that have been announced.
You know what, Harmon, Robert, and myself, we had been transferred to a punishment camp in Angola called Camp J because we had participated in a hunger strike to force the administration to give us, you know, some humane treatment and provide us with an avenue in which we could help ourselves, improve ourselves. So, you know, we had always, this was not the first suit we had to file about long-term cell confinement. And, you know, when we was released from Camp J, we decided that we need to try to challenge this again. We need to try to change this barbaric treatment of locking a man in a cell for 23 hours a day for decades. And for us, it was about that, and it continues to be about that.
And what do you think of the reforms that have been announced by President Obama and other jurisdictions that are taking steps to reduce solitary confinement? I know you followed the news a little bit. And what's your response to these? Are they far enough, and what would you like to see happen?
Well, I don't, you know, I think as a result of our suit, and thanks to the International Coalition of Free the Angola Tree and Amnesty International and other groups around the country and around the world, we inspired other guys in solitary confinement in other states and other prisons to try to do something about this condition. So we put this solitary confinement issue before American people, before the people of the world, and it just started building, you know, and it got to the point where it wasn't just about Angola 3, but it was about solitary confinement.
We're going to have Albert, we're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to continue our discussion and post it online. Albert Woodfox, the longest-standing solitary confinement prisoner in the United States, released on Friday. And thanks to Robert King and Billy Southern. I'm Amy Goodman with Renee Feltz. Thanks so much for joining us.